Welcome. Welcome to
I'm fixing my mic. Oh. Okay. All right, I got it.
Okay. Stop touching everything.
I'm done fixing it.
You're breaking all the things.
I'm Dave White of Linoleum Knife.
And Movies.com.
You're Alonzo Duralde of Linoleum Knife.
Yes. Also, The Rap and What the Flick on YouTube. And
this is Linoleum Knife. It's a podcast of the cinema.
Yes. Welcome, won't you?
What?
I don't know.
You need to quit it.
Okay, fine. You go ahead. You talk.
I'm really good at these smooth intros.
Yes.
And you always trip everything up. You're the problem.
Only for this intro bits, because you've psyched me out about them. Yeah. Beyond that, but then
I was just trying to help.
Once we get past this transitional period, I'm fully in charge.
I was just trying to help you get better.
I'm fully in charge
at your job, which is this. Mm-hmm. This is your one one job.
I wish this was my one job. It is not my one job.
There's a lot this week.
Yes.
There's Transformers, and there are a bunch of little indie films.
Mm-hmm. We have to talk about the Paramount Drive-In.
We will talk about the Paramount Drive-In.
Because several people on Facebook asked, and I told them they had to listen to the show if they wanted to know.
Oh, smart of you.
Aren't I?
Yeah. Yes.
It's going to give that stuff away.
Yeah, we've got Transformers, we've got Citizen Coke, which I did not see.
Yes.
Begin Again, which I did see. Yves Saint Laurent, which I did see. Snowpiercer, which
I did not see.
And you did not see.
I thought we were going to hold off on Snowpiercer.
We are going to hold off on Snowpiercer. If you are a person who reads my reviews on movies.com, you will see only the review I wrote for Transformers.
Hmm.
And that is because my job, my website has some problems right now.
It's going through a rough patch.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm not in control of this.
Right.
And neither is the editor who is right above me, who pushes my stuff through.
Uh-huh.
Like, I write my work, he gets it, he sends it through, and then it waits for someone whose job it is to put the art in and build the page for the review. And the little movies lately, they've just not been putting them through. So Jersey Boys review didn't run.
Mm.
I wrote it and it did not run.
Was a pretty wide release.
Yeah, and so I'm honestly, I don't understand what's happening.
So your reviews are circling the runway at JFK.
They are. I'm writing reviews that are not going up into the world, except for Transformers, which did.
Sure.
And, you know,
the people have a right to know.
I'm still grateful to have a job. But we have technical difficulties at movies.com, and I don't know what they are, and I don't know why they are, and I don't know who was supposed to tell me about what's going to happen or how it's going to be fixed. So if you'll be patient with me, be patient with my job, my employer. Be patient with my employer as they work through this rough patch that they're going through. A rough patch that I don't know a thing about,
yeah.
Other than the net effect is my writing is floating out in the void of nothing at the moment.
Not having technical difficulties at the moment are some of our lovely listeners who've been really great about plugging our stuff. Tim Bond on Twitter has been out telling Clue fans that they need to go listen to our Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife Extra episode.
That is a fact.
Which we really appreciate.
$1.99.
Yes.
Get on it.
PayPal to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. And Sean Wicks, who is a blogger and fan of the show, did a whole piece about The Source Family, which is a movie that he found on account of us. So, yay. Thanks, Sean.
It's a documentary about a sexy cult.
Yes.
That existed.
In the early 70s.
In the early 70s in Los Angeles. It's called The Source Family. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And it's really great.
It's available out there somewhere. You should totally check it out.
All right, Transformers. Let's just do it.
What? We're not going to talk about the drive-in first?
Let's talk about Transformers first.
Okay.
Then we can tell people about our night at the drive-in.
Okay. And you...
Our night of romance.
With the movies. And at some point you have to tell your screening room story from last week.
Which, when we talk about Monica Mana, I will.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. That's a tale.
It is a story of what happened at the Monica Mana screening.
Mm-hmm.
If you've never heard of the movie Monica Mana, don't despair. You are not alone. It is a tiny, tiny, tiny little micro release that's going around the country right now. It opened in New York a couple weeks ago. It's opening in Los Angeles this week. I have seen it. It's beautiful. It's one of my favorite movies so far this year. I have written a review that is currently on linoleum-knife.com. I did not write it for movies.com because the only thing they care
so micro.
The only thing they care less about than limited release pictures that go out to 500 screens is limited release films that go out to one screen at a time. Yeah. So go to linoleum-knife.com. You can read my Monica Mana review. I'm dragging Alonzo to see it this week. He knows nothing about it so far.
Yeah, I didn't even get to edit his review because he wants me to not know anything.
And then we'll talk about it next week.
All right. And then you can tell the story.
Transformers. We seed it.
Mm-hmm.
We watched it. Madeline Brand on KCRW's Press Play thinks that I'm trying to get some kind of PhD thesis by talking about it. But I don't think that's true. I think that I like the Transformers just fine. They are not good movies. They are not movies that are going to, you know, make anyone think anything about cinema. They are not movies that are going to make anyone think anything about anything.
No.
But for me, they have an appeal, and the appeal is noise. And a kind of visual noise that I also respond to.
So this is like cinematic Xanthor, basically.
Yes, Xanthor. The joke that is so inside that it needs to be explained every single time you bring it up. Here's a quick version.
It's a joke from this show.
Xastor, black metal artist that I am really into, X-A-S-T-H-U-R. You seem to think is named Xanthor.
It would be cooler if it was.
And no, it would not be cooler.
It would sound more like an artificial sweetener.
It would sound a lot like a lot of things, like a person who plays perhaps the pan flute. And
it's a LARP name.
That's your little joke about black metal that you like to pop out every once in a while. But there's a sonic and visual noise that I appreciate. It's a different kind of noise than the a-hole dogs that live beneath us that are currently barking their heads off again right now. And the Transformers do this for me, even though the rest of the film, all the talking and the humans and the plot and the everything, it's garbage. I still have a good time because I like that digital onslaught. I like the sounds that they make. I like the fighting. I like the ridiculousness of a robot jumping on top of a Dinobot, a metal dinosaur robot, and going off to fight other robots. It doesn't make any sense, but I'm kind of into it. I said to Madeline on KCRW that it's an abstraction of the kind of movie that people think they want. And I believe that's true. I believe that people think they want a movie like that, and they go see it. And because they have spent $10 to $15 on a ticket, they walk out thinking, well, that sure was long, so I think I got my money's worth. It was like value for my dollar. This is the longest Transformers movie that has happened so far. 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
No more Shia LaBeouf. We got Mark Wahlberg as a robotics engineer.
From Texas.
Who is in Texas, and he lives with his daughter, and her name is Short Shorts. And together they...
Coochie snorers, I believe they're called.
Together they fight the Decepticons, Kelsey Grammer, and Apple Computers.
They do in this, the guise of Stanley Tucci?
They do this with the help of the Optimus Prime.
An Irish race car driver in Texas.
An Irish race car driver who is the Short Shorts' boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And the other Autobots that are helping Optimus Prime. One of them is fat and smokes a metal cigar.
And has, like, a metal beard.
And is, yeah, metal beard.
And is voiced by John Goodman.
Is John Goodman. And then Optimus Prime jumps on the dinosaur and at the 2-hour and 30-minute mark, and then it's done. My butt hurt a lot by the time this was over, and that is my chief complaint. I would have been happy with this film if it had been a mere 2 hours and say 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
A little shorter than the part three. What is that?
Planet of the Earth.
Jukebox on the Moon. Is that what it was called?
Dark of the Moon.
Planet of the Earth.
Yeah.
But this was nearly 3 hours, and it wore me down. I was actually really pretty tired when it was over. And it wore out its junk appeal for me.
Mm.
So, You talk about it, and then I'll tell you what happened when I gave it 2.5 stars on movies.com.
On paper, I got nothing against giant robots fighting. Giant robots fighting can be fun, fun, fun. I can't stand the Michael Bay aesthetic of confuso vision and, like, rapid-fire editing. I mean, at least it's more visually clear than the earlier Transformers movies were. Like, the bots themselves are crisp. But it's so such a jumble, and the plot is so confusing. The movie starts like it's Prometheus. It's about, like, the origins of the species, and about, you know, the dinosaurs were not killed by, you know, meteors or cigarettes, as Gary Larson had suggested, but by some other sort of, like, robot species. And then they find the skeleton of the dinosaur, and they realize that the
science was wrong. All those sciences.
And then, like, Optimus Prime, who has always vowed to never hurt humans, now wants to kill human because we've been going to war against the Autobots for no good reason.
Well, yeah.
But then he changes his mind.
You would, too.
He doesn't, and
they save our asses 3 movies in a row, and the government's we're sorry, now you all.
And part of the reason that humanity has turned against the Autobots is because of the terrible destruction of Chicago in the last movie. And then they get to Chicago in this movie, and it looks exactly like it does now. It's perfectly fine.
They rebuilt pretty quickly, and no one seems to remember that it was the Decepticons' fault that Chicago got ruined in the first place.
You know, this movie flirts that it's maybe going to have an idea to say something about, immigration or exploitation of the fear of terrorism, but then, let's just blow some stuff up and, here we go. Let's cross-cut between 2 different robot battles so that we can make it completely incoherent as to what's going on and who's where and why and what they're doing and for what reason.
And then they go to China because dollars.
Yeah, the whole third act of this movie takes place in China and Hong Kong just because that's where everyone is going to movies now and for no real reason having to do with anything. And again, it's this thing I pointed out in the last Transformers movie, and I'm sure probably happens in all of them, but I just haven't necessarily noticed. Like, you can always tell, you know, the good guys with big sword and big gun, and the villain at some point will always have, like, a bright, shiny light circle surrounded by whirring blades going around and around in circles.
What did you call it before? The problem in Daddy's pants?
Yes.
Pretty accurate.
So basically what I'm saying is drop dead, Michael Bay. You're terrible. Go away. You're a sexist. Your movies are vaguely racist. There's way too much product placement, and they're terrible.
I gave it 2.5 out of 5 on movies.com. Now, when I talk about the star ratings that I give on movies.com, I want you to understand that they are meaningless at all times, no matter what they are. But there is a certain code that I adhere to. A very, very, very good movie that I love a lot tends to get a 4.5 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
Because one more half means it's as good as anything that was ever made. Sometimes I give in and I give a 5 because I'm so excited.
Did you give We Are the Best of 5?
I did.
Good. So did I.
And if I give a half, it's the very worst thing in the world and don't go see it. If I give a 0, it's the very worst thing in the world and, oh boy,
you
have to go see it right now. 2.5 is eh. You know, I might have had a good time. I maybe even gave it a fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. But I don't really have a serious opinion about it because it's not worth thinking about all that long. I don't even like to give star ratings, but it's part of my job.
Well, someone's paying way too much attention to mine. Like, they actually wrote an email to Cinematical, or, yeah. Metacritic.
Tattling.
To Metacritic, telling them that my score there didn't match my score on What the Flick.
And you're not even responsible for your Metacritic score. They devise your score.
Yeah, but it was for just, you. Well, I give them a rough idea of what it is. But
yeah, but still, you don't have the final say in what the score is on Metacritic.
Okay.
They do.
I've explained this to you.
It doesn't matter. I'm right.
No, but you aren't listening to me as usual. Anyway, so he actually emailed me, well, should I change? I said, yeah, fine. But I mean, who is out there paying attention to this stuff?
Some dude.
Anyway, so what happened after
you're doing that? Here's the email I got. From the amazing David Zeev. Now, David Zeev is a friend of mine in Dallas. David Zeev is the good dude who sent you, for your birthday, the singing hamburger birthday card.
Hamburger, today is your birthday. I'm juicy and delicious, and I am here to say happy birthday to you.
He sends me one with a... it's a bag of peanuts with a squirrel sitting on top of it. And you remove the squirrel from the card, and it does this. And then don't touch my nuts, says the squirrel. My nuts, nuts, my nuts, nuts. This is also a terrific card. Almost as good as Singing Hamburger. The equal of Singing Hamburger, if you really want to get specific, because all the squirrel does is keep saying nuts, my nuts, my nuts, over and over. I deeply appreciate that sort of thing. Here is the email I got from David Zeev about my 2.5-star review.
For Transformers Age of Extinction.
Subject line. Me, Grimlock, have question for Lord White, leader of humans. Me, Grimlock, and Dinobots, shocked to see smartest human Lord White give 2.5 stars to movie made by evil director. Review, I do give absolute zero to movie that makes Dinobots look nothing like we are. Me, Grimlock, think evil director control mind of superior human Lord White and make him give more stars than movie deserve. If this so, we Dinobots save leader of humans by taking evil director to Cybertron and turn into Energon. Energon? I don't know. Energon Cube.
By the way, when I say drop dead Michael Bay, I mean career death. I mean no actual ill will toward his person.
No, because, I mean, I'm sure he's nice to his family. Also, maybe to his friends.
Perhaps.
We don't know.
I just want him to not make movies anymore. And does anybody ever call Steven Spielberg on this? Like, are there ever any interviews with Steven Spielberg where he says, what are you thinking, executive producing these movies? Like, what besides money are you getting out of
cash
this?
Cash money. You've got money to...
He gets such a pass through. You know what he has
for these? He's got to finance Lincoln 2. Because ain't nobody giving him money for that stuff anymore.
The Lincolning.
That was going to be an HBO movie, if you remember.
He's getting money from, like, India and stuff. He's fine.
All right.
He needs to give John Waters $10 million to make fruitcake.
My response to... Grimlock, Grimlock Zeev, was, it's because I don't care what evil director does to these toys that I have no personal investment in. His response to me, Grimlock, understand. Me always respect superior human leader, Lord White. Thank you, Grimlock Zeev. You're humble and lovable. So that's the end of Transformers. You saw, speaking of Decepticons and bots,
an ultimate evil in the universe.
Ultimate evil. You saw the documentary Citizen Coke.
Yes.
Why don't you talk about it?
Okay.
I'm never going to watch this movie.
Yeah, it's... I was a little disappointed.
I've decided already. I'm never going to watch this.
Its big selling point was that it was banned by PBS. Like, apparently they were making it as a PBS doc, and one of the Cokes is a big donor to PBS, and they kind of put the kibosh on that. So they think, okay, whoa, they're going to really rip the lid off the Coke brothers. I watch Rachel Maddow at least twice a week.
You watch Rachel Maddow at least 4 to 5 times a week.
Lately I have not had as much time.
It's only because you've been so busy with Outfest. Yeah.
But usually...
When you got your druthers...
I watch her every
day. You're glued to your favorite news analyst.
It's true. But generally, lately, it's been like two, three times
your Wendy Williams.
Yes, I watch her while I iron and hear about what's going on in the world.
That's right. Wendy Williams is my Rachel Maddow.
Yes. Anyway, there was nothing that was in Citizen Coke that I didn't kind of know already. I mean, yes, their father was one of the founders of the John Birch Society. They are super, super mega rich, and they give tons and tons and tons and tons of money to awful right-wing politicians and to AstroTurf groups like Americans for Prosperity and stuff that, you know, that bust people to town hall meetings to yell at the people about Obamacare or to, you know, like to march on the Senate and
death panels.
Death panels.
Don't tread on me.
Exactly. All that garbage. So I thought, okay, well, you know, if you're Citizen Coke, we're going to really learn more about the Cokes and who they are and what they do. No, not really. I mean, we basically, the movie is about how Citizens United was a ridiculous decision and how it is now allowing corporate interests to pour unlimited funding into campaigns. And it's how they put Scott Walker into the governor's chair in Wisconsin and Scott Walker screwed over the unions. And, you know, the interesting thing the movie does is they find all these people in Wisconsin who were Republicans who had gone through their lives thinking that, well, yeah, I'm a Republican and I'm a union member. And those things are compatible, right?
Right.
Nope.
Wrong. Sorry. Wrong.
Not anymore. Not in this day and age. And it's basically, and again, this is something that Maddow talks about all the time. The reason they want to gut unions is because when you look at the like top 10 sources of funding for campaigns, 7 of them are things like Americans for Prosperity and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and very right-wing leaning groups. 3 of them are labor unions, and they're the only ones that are giving big amounts of money, way less than these other guys are, but at least they're up in the running to give money to left-leaning candidates. You knock out the unions and knock out their financial power, then bam, the Republicans run the table, basically.
But Alonzo, doesn't that libtard George Soros own all of the United States already? Who are you trying to kid? Respond. The people have a right to know.
So, yeah. So, I mean, I guess if you are not paying attention to this stuff at all and you are not so on the teat of Fox News that you're open to sort of learning some things, then you know, you might get something out of this documentary. But to me, it just kind of felt like mostly a rehash of stuff I knew. And it's kind of a bummer in that it doesn't really end with any sort of like, well, here's how we fight back and here's how we get Citizen United overturned and here's how we, you know, da-da-da-da. It really kind of ends with, well, we're screwed.
That's life. So it's not really an advocacy doc. It's sort of meant to be simply presentational.
I mean, it's an advocacy doc in that it has a definite point of view.
Right.
But it's not advocating any actual action on the part of the community. No.
Like, Fed Up is an advocacy documentary where they,
at the end of the movie, like, get out there and stop eating
sugar.
Here's
what you can do, and here's how you can fix this. And
yeah, this movie doesn't really, they really kind of present it like it's, like this ship has sailed and we're screwed.
I see.
But there are people out there that really are fighting to get Congress to overturn Citizens United. So, but, you know, good luck with that. We'll see how it goes.
Right.
But, yeah, this movie doesn't really take you anywhere with that. And it just, I don't know, I really kind of felt like, okay, if I watched MSNBC for a week, you know, all of this stuff would be in there somewhere.
Right. Okay, so we both saw the Yves Saint Laurent doc.
Yes, titled Yves Saint Laurent.
Yeah.
It's not a doc, it's a biopic.
Sorry. It's a biopic.
Yes.
I got confused. There are 3 documentaries already about Yves Saint Laurent.
Yes.
Yves Saint Laurent, His Life and Times.
Mm-hmm.
Yves Saint Laurent, the address of his atelier.
I wonder if you knew that one off the top of your head
something,
or not.
Something, something, Rue,
Paris, 76115.
Paris. And then Le Morfou, which I am going to repost on linoleum-knife.com because I originally wrote a review of it for an art blog called Future Shipwreck that no longer exists, and it was lost when the site went down. So I'll get that and I'll repost it to linoleum-knife.com and you can read it.
But any of those
probably
three
well
movies.
Before you'll get to read my actual review of Yves Saint Laurent, the biopic on movies.com.
Any of those documentaries on Yves Saint Laurent will probably tell you way, way more.
Not probably, they will.
They will.
I've seen all three of them. One of them, the one...
the address
his
one?
The address one, the one with his address in the title, has extensive footage of his fitting clothing to measuring of and friendship with Catherine Deneuve. And Catherine Deneuve is not represented at all, not for one second, in
Yves Saint Laurent.
In this biopic, even though they had a deep friendship, and she was kind of his non-fashion world muse.
Yeah, really. His other two muses do pop up in the film, Lulu de la Falaise
and Betty Catroux.
Dave and I are such fans of Lulu de la Falaise that the one time we were in Paris...
Let's make it clear. We're fans of her name.
Yeah, basically. We just like saying Lulu de la Falaise.
To be named that? Anybody would be happy to be named that.
Hmm.
And she, for a while, had her own shop in Paris. And
but not anymore?
It's gone now. Oh, yeah. She's doing other stuff.
Okay.
But...
We tracked it down.
We tracked it down and took our picture in front of the sign just because it said Lulu de la Falaise on the sign. Maybe we'll post that somewhere on the linoleum.
I'll see if I can dig it up.
Yeah. At least on the Facebook page.
Yes.
Yeah. That picture is notable in that I am not wearing black.
Yeah, it's true.
In that picture.
And my hair is all one color.
Yeah.
So this biopic, basically, it's there are two Yves Saint Laurent biopics coming out this year. One just premiered at Cannes called Saint Laurent, and it's opening at the end of the year. And then this is the sort of officially approved, signed off on by Pierre Berger and the estate. The dresses are gorgeous, and they're the real dresses, apparently, that they borrowed for the shoot.
And Pierre Ninet, who plays
Saint Laurent.
Saint Laurent, looks exactly like him. And he and the guy who plays Pierre Berger,
Guillaume Gallien,
they give good performances.
Yeah.
In fact, the movie looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't histrionic. It isn't. There's not this like breakneck pace to show you a million things. It moves in a very sedate manner. It's not an onslaught of any sort. It's not one of those hit it kind of biopics where you just move from event to event to event.
Right.
But
you don't learn a thing.
You don't really get to the heart of this guy. You just get to see the things he did. And one of the things he did was lots of drugs.
Yes. And to its credit, they don't whitewash that.
Yeah. They deal with his drug problem head on. He eventually got off the drugs. But it's frustrating the way that many biopics are frustrating in that it tries to cover too much ground.
Yeah, and weirdly, it even cuts off the last 30 years of his life.
Yeah.
So even in choosing a more, like a smaller, denser chunk, it's still just kind of like, well, he made these dresses, and then he made these dresses.
Yeah.
And it's never a thing of what drove him in the first place, what inspired him. You know, we meet these muses are supposedly turning him onto things, but we never see a direct correlation between his relationship with either of these women and what he winds up designing. There's one scene where he pulls a Mondrian book off the shelf and invents color blocking, you know, but apart from that, it's like there's, you know, and it's hard with movies about artists, you know, you don't want to have the shots of the writer sitting at his typewriter and clattering away with a cigarette in his mouth, you know. But give us some idea about what was happening in his life that made him the guy that he was.
Unless it's You've Got Mail and then watching Meg Ryan type is the best.
That's the best.
The best thing
in
the world.
We still imitate that. But like, you know, he became, you know, this big designer at Dior at age 21. How?
Why?
How does that work? Like, what did he have? What was he doing that nobody else was doing?
Right.
You know, it's kind of like Jersey Boys. Like, when did they fall off the charts? Who is their competition? What was happening in the world? Like, they can't be bothered. And so you just kind of leave with this very sort of cursory idea of what made this guy tick and why he was such a success. And, yeah, you know, it's very unsatisfying. But beautiful to look at.
It's 50% satisfying. I wouldn't call it very unsatisfying.
I was frustrated at how...
If you're obsessed with fashion and this guy, you'll probably half enjoy yourself.
Well, sure, yeah. If you go in already knowing stuff about him and you just want to see the actual dresses or the thing. You know, the movie begins, like, they're going to treat this as the sort of... the structure of the film. It opens with you know, he's just died. Berger is boxing up their art collection and selling it. That's the thing that the L'Amour Fou documentary is about. And, you know, talks about, oh, yes, you know, this was something that we built together and we bought everything in twos and blah, 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 blah. And then there's...
Blah, 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 blah is a French word.
Yes.
And it means... I don't know what, because I don't speak French.
There's one scene in the movie where you see Saint Laurent go into an antique store and buy, like, a big Egyptian bust or something. And that's it. That's the only time that art ever comes up again in the movie. So,
well, he buys the Buddha, but he buys it alone.
Right, but there's never anything about about their relationship and the art.
And he
was
so rich, he bought the actual Buddha.
You know, you think there's going to be these scenes about how them buying art together and what that meant to them and their sort of shared, you know, aesthetic. Whatever. Nope, never talked about again.
And it was a very important part of their life.
Yeah.
I remember reviewing L'Amour Fou and the headline that I gave the review was, they bought a shitload of stuff.
We have to bleep you now.
I know you have to bleep me, but that was the headline.
You know, and the movie doesn't even circle back to it at the end. Suddenly at the end, there's this 1976 fashion show, and it's like the fourth fashion show in the movie, and it's a little longer and maybe a little more detail and stuff, and then boom, movie over.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I was
frustrated. Go home and learn more about fashion from the internet.
I'd like to read more about it.
Okay, so then there's Begin Again, which is the new movie from the guy whose name I'm blanking on.
John Carney.
He directed and wrote Once.
Yes.
And there's a whole bunch of folks who worked on this film with him. Glenn Hansard from Once.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Alexander, formerly of the new Radicals from that band from the 90s.
Yes.
Who is now a big songwriter and producer.
Producer, yeah.
Danielle Brisbois, former child star who appeared on Archie Bunker's Place and other sitcoms of the 1970s before dropping out of acting and becoming a songwriter herself.
Right, and Greg Alexander produced her solo album Arrive All Over You, and she collaborated on the New Radicals.
Judd Apatow was a producer of this film. Mm-hmm. Mark Ruffalo, Catherine Keener, Keira Knightley, James Corden,
Haley Steinfeld.
He's got stars this time around.
Yeah,
and. Another story about people trying to make it in the music world.
And about music bringing people together and expressing what it is that they can't say in words.
Yes.
And for me...
It's silly. But why don't you tell people why you think it is so
I can't defend this movie, but I love
you
this movie.
You can defend it.
No,
defend it.
I can't. I
mean, defend yourself.
No, because it's one of those things where everything that you say about this movie that's negative
is true.
Yeah. Yes, it is hokey, it's cornball, it is unbelievable, it is disingenuous, it is... you know, you name it, but I like...
What do I call it on KCRW? A fairy tale of New York.
It is a fairy tale of New York. Yeah. It is totally a fairy tale of New York. You know, they actually wind up recording an entire album, like, you know, under the archway in Washington Square and in the subway and on rooftops and in alleyways.
Which is a cute trick, and it's... But the way they talk about it is so ridiculous. It's like, because, you know... They Came Together, which also comes out this week.
Right. Oh, yeah, we should talk about
where
that.
Where they goof on the idea of movies that use
New York was a character in our...
character in our story, and they totally do it non-ironically in this film.
Right.
Like, New York, that messy, sprawling, beautiful place, it's like another character. It'll be like an instrument on the album, man. And then they do that. And so you kind of have to hold your laughter... While they do it, and while their sincerity overtakes you.
Yeah, at some point in this movie, I decided, okay, I'm going to treat this like when you're watching a 30s movie on TCM, and you know that the reality of the situation is that there was a depression going on, and everybody was poor and miserable, and fascism was on the rise in Europe, and just things were awful. And at the same time, you could go in, pay 5 cents, and see a movie about a hat check girl who becomes the toast of Broadway, and you totally buy that, and you're totally happy with that.
Broadway.
So, yeah, so this movie is completely, you know, this just sort of shiny bauble of fake, but I really enjoyed it. Granted, a lot of it has to do with the fact that I was a huge New Radicals fan, and I'm very excited that there's a new Greg Alexander album out, even if it's the soundtrack to Begin Again. And I don't know, I let it sweep me up. But I can in no way defend it as being a great film or a hard-hitting film or a remotely realistic film. But if you're down for a fairy tale of New York, you'll have fun.
Yes. I don't hate this movie.
What do you have to say about like it? Sourpuss?
Nine to 19 times during the film, I just rolled my eyes and said, oh, brother, this is not the kind of movie that I thought it was going to be, and I'm about to cough. So what you just heard was an edit. I have accomplished my cough.
Hooray.
Yeah.
I don't roll my eyes anymore. I actually hit my forehead with my palm.
I had to keep reminding myself, you thought you were going to get one thing, and you've gotten another thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to maybe try to accept that you can't be with the one you love. Maybe you should try to love the one you're with. That is what
I
learned during the watching of this film.
Once was such a sort of fragile creation. Like, yeah. There's no way that you're going to make that movie twice.
No.
It's amazing that you made it once.
No.
So, you know, I was just sort of expecting, okay, so this is going to be what happens when Hollywood decides they want a taste of that once action, and they're going to bloat it and make it ridiculous. And
yeah.
In a sense, maybe they do that, but I kind of felt like they were at least trying to still make something that was sweet and that was personal and that felt genuine, at least on a human level, even if not on a plot level.
I put it in the same camp with Chef, and that it's so good-natured,
right,
and so into its own self,
you forgive a lot,
that you wind up at the end of it thinking, all right, sure, yes, I get it. I don't, how, what, it's like this dog that keeps licking you. You know, you can't hit the dog because it just wants to love you and be loved. But
yeah, and if you're going to forgive a movie for being hokey, I would much rather do it for something as good as Begin Again than for something as contrived as Million Dollar Arm.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So they came together.
Yeah.
I despise this movie.
Yeah,
it's a parody. It's from the guys who made Wet Hot American Summer.
Right.
Stars Amy Poehler and Paul Rudd in a parody of a romantic comedy.
Right.
Right down to all the dialogue tics that happen in a Katherine Heigl style romantic comedy, all the plot beats combined with this incredibly self-aware and arch knowing quality, where they are all but staring you right in the face and the camera going, get it? See what we're doing? We're goofing on this.
Yeah, but they do what they do, but then they tell you that they're doing what they do, which is, I find, annoying. It is a parody of romantic comedies in the same way that Wet Hot American Summer was a parody of 80s teen movies.
Uh-huh.
But I find both of those movies really not very funny because they're either A, over-explaining what they're doing lest you don't get it, or because the over-explaining itself is meant to be the joke, and if it is, it's not a funny one for me. Or they're like doing something that is so completely off base, surreal, weird as a twist thing that it blows the idea of it being a parody, and then it becomes really hard to follow what little plot there is. And say what you will, like, say a movie like Airplane, as anarchic as it is, there is a plot that you're following all the way through. They have to land the plane, and this movie just goes off on these tangents and throws in these random things that don't mean anything because, haha, we did this. I basically have been saying
motorcycle.
If you're a fan of Wet Hot motorcycle. American Summer, you will likely like this one. But if, like me, you didn't care for Wet Hot American Summer that much, you will also not care for this one very much.
I enjoyed ish Wet Hot American Summer the same way that I enjoyed ish this. Every once in a while, the hey, we just made a joke, and here's the joke we just made, and we made it because we're here to make jokes. Did you see the joke we just made? It was a joke. That, the repeated, instance of that happening,
mm-hmm.
I laughed fewer and fewer times at it each time it happened. But here's what I did really love.
But then you like Tim and Eric, too.
Here's what I really loved about the film. Amy Poehler does almost nothing wrong for me. I would watch her do anything. I will watch her be on talk shows just talking to whoever the host is.
Would you watch Baby Mama again?
Yeah, I like Baby Mama. Mm. I enjoyed Baby Mama. I'm not ashamed. I enjoyed Baby Mama quite a bit. Anyway, I really enjoyed the really whacked out absurdity stuff that would take place. Like, the camera would begin focusing on two people staring at them while they were doing whatever it was they were doing, and the camera had lost interest in them and was now focused entirely on the people who are staring at them in public doing whatever. I loved that kind of stuff. I also loved how a scene would begin being about one thing, become about another thing, and wind up completely being about something else by the time the scene was over. Intentionally so.
Mm-hmm.
They intentionally wrote scenes that had bizarre arcs in them that never gave you a point A to point B. It gave you a point A to point F and back to point C again. That's weird, and they did that on purpose, and I really appreciate that.
No,
and it's because, probably, that I'm a fan of the Tim and Eric style stuff that I'm willing to go forward with a movie that does that sort of thing.
I grant that everything in this movie is done intentionally. I mean, these guys, I think, are very controlled in what it is they're doing and why they want to do it and how they're doing it. It just is not something that I find amusing. And our friend Mark Hoyk, who's been on the show, had a really funny comment.
He despises both of these films, too.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And he, like me, really likes Role Models, which David Wayne directed and Paul Rudd starred in, which was great. And that's a movie that actually is a linear story and is very funny. But he said that the Wet Hot American Summer is a movie that is filled with the suppositions of jokes and the notions of jokes and the ideas of jokes and the setups for jokes, but no jokes. I'm misquoting him, I'm sure. But yeah, to me, it feels like they're constantly funny adjacent, but they're never funny. And I saw it.
Conceptualist comedy.
I guess And so I saw it at the LA Film Festival, and people around me were laughing, and I was just like,
I laughed quite a bit,
gritting my teeth more and more because
I really did laugh a lot.
I wanted to lie. You know, time has sort of fuzzed my memory of Wet Hot American Summer, and I just remember the one part that I think is funny, which is the Rick Springfield montage. and so I thought, okay, well, this is, you know, I love Paul Rudd, I love Amy Poehler, let's see it, you know, and then literally within the first 5 minutes, I was like, oh, it's going to be one of these. It's like David Wayne, because. All those guys from the state are so hit and miss for me. Like I said, I loved Role Models, but then you get stuff like, did you ever watch Stella?
Sometimes.
You know, I never thought that show was very funny. Even Strangers with Candy, that people love, I love
Strangers
really,
with Candy.
Really hit and miss. Yeah, but remember how bad the movie was?
Okay, yes, but some of it was funny.
Some of it was funny, and then the show was often funny.
Discreet moments.
Yes,
that. Yeah.
But so I don't know. So I've run very hot and cold with these guys, and the more sort of conceptual, like funny in quotes, they get, the more I hate it. And so this movie is very, for me, funny in quotes.
Okay, we went to the drive-in.
Yes, because we love the drive-in.
We love going to the drive-in, and Southern California is blessed.
Yes,
with about half a dozen of them.
At least.
From San Diego up into the Inland Empire.
Yeah.
And now there is a freshly reopened one, more or less in the greater Los Angeles area, just east of Compton.
Like going down to Long Beach.
In Paramount.
Yeah.
That's a
the suburb, city of Paramount.
The city of Paramount, yeah. It's the Paramount Drive-In. It has been in the same family since the 40s. It closed for a while, but the son of the original owner, who is now in his 60s, he reopened it. And I don't know if they raised the old one or if they just renovated from top to bottom, but nothing in this place looks old.
Yeah.
The screens are brand new. Everything is brand new.
The asphalt seems fairly fresh.
Yeah.
It's only been reopened for a couple of months.
Yeah. So we needed to check it out.
Yeah.
We went last night. We saw How to Train Your Dragon 2 and mm-hmm. and 20 minutes of Maleficent. Mm-hmm. and we, you know, availed ourselves to the concession stand out with all our friends with our folding chairs.
When you drive in, do you have it handy? You are handed a list of rules.
You are handed a list of rules. Yes, I've got it right here. Larger sized vans, trucks, and tall SUVs will be required to park in the designated back rows. Speed limit is 5 miles per hour. Horn honking will not be allowed. All vehicles must park within a marked parking stall. Each vehicle is entitled to one parking space. You may not sit or place any object on the roof of your vehicle. You may not leave your car running while watching the movie. Dolby Digital. Do not use loud voices, horns, radios, or any other loud sound to disturb other people. No obscene language, no drugs, no alcohol, which is the rule that everyone that we were with, well, no one had drugs, but everybody brought booze. And then they drove home.
Well, at least one of those people, we drove home. Yes. So.
Yes. We did not drink and drive.
No.
Who else did not drink and drive? No, all the drivers did not drink.
Yeah.
That is true. We're responsible citizens.
Yes.
I'm just thinking, who else was a driver? Kath was a driver. Sean was a driver. Mm.
Chris.
Chris was a driver.
And we were driving.
Yeah, none of those people were.
And Whitney.
None of those people tanked up. Whitney was driving. Yeah, okay. So, you may not leave in return. You must wear shoes and shirts at all times. You may not switch screens. No cooking or grilling. no laser pointers. And there's like 12 other rules on the page. excuse me.
And there were a lot of people there.
That cough is just going to stay in
there. A lot of people enforcing those rules.
Yeah. They do not lack for security. They will ride around in their little carts. And you were being watched while you watched this movie. I appreciate that on one level. Yeah. I like to know that someone's paying attention.
The rowdies aren't going to get out of hand.
Yeah. The only thing I objected to about this place was its fresh, clean newness. And I know that is a stupid thing to complain about.
It was a little sterile.
But I do like the old drive-ins that have been refurbed, but the people were thoughtful enough to
maintain the charm.
To maintain some of the original character of the place. And this place is pretty much a parking lot.
With two
big screens that are brand spanking new and on these big column-y poles. Yeah. And it's a pretty matter-of-fact kind of place. You're not going to get any personality from anything.
Yeah.
It's right next to the 12-screen multiplex that the same family owns. Mm-hmm. That's fine, too. It's very close to us. What did it take us, 45 minutes?
Something like that,
That's just a cross-town drive, really. Yeah. But I think I might sooner go back to the Mission Tiki, which takes well over an hour to get to, mm-hmm. simply because it's tiki-themed.
Yes.
And the concessions are great. And you get the funnel cakes and the carne asada.
The concessions at this place were fairly
run-of-the-mill.
Meh. Yeah. I had a pizza that was...
If you live in Los Angeles and you don't want to make a big run somewhere, you don't want to take a 90-minute chunk, if you don't want a two-hour commute back and forth...
Try
the Paramount Drive-In.
It's fine.
It's fine, yeah. If you're looking for the old-school drive-in experience, one of the other ones would do.
Yeah.
I mean, even honestly, even the Vineland in City of Industry,
and
that place is a janky dump, but I still have a great time there.
Yeah. They at least when you go in the concession stand, it feels old-school.
Appealingly grody about the Vineland.
Right.
And... I don't know. Maybe I have the problem.
Like the vinyl and the signs, they're like hanging on since 1963.
You know? Yeah. So anyway, we went to the drive-in. We have no ads to read this week.
No.
We have DVD picks. Mine is L'Amour Fou.
Yes.
The Yves Saint Laurent documentary about the art auction that took place. Mm. And Pierre Berger, hands-on, talking to you about the entire life that they shared together, including all the art stuff and the homes at the auction itself. It's really fascinating, a really great movie. A lot of cool archival footage. That's the one I would recommend.
Okay.
You want to watch the one with the address in the title? You should do that too. It's very quiet, but it's a lot of Catherine Deneuve getting fit for couture.
That Who ain't doesn't bad. Want to watch that?
Yeah, that ain't bad to look at either. So, you know.
I decided that instead of a DVD pick this week, I was going to do a CD pick. And that would be New Radicals, Maybe You've Been Brainwashed Too.
Yeah, Brainwashed Too, exactly.
Yeah. Which is.
I'm going to regret living with you for the next 4 weeks, I think.
I warned you. I said, look, Dave, prepare to get sick of this Begin Again soundtrack because it's the first New Radicals album in 15 years.
This is going to be your Let It Go. I can tell that already. So you're like the 9-year-old girl singing Let It Go 7 times
a
day.
Yeah, so I'm going to be belting out my Keira Knightley songs. All but right. So pick up Maybe You've Been Brainwashed Too, download it, stream it, whatever. It's a great CD.
Top 10 films starting with a number.
Who's this from?
We'll get to that.
Okay, fine.
12 Angry Men.
Okay.
12 Monkeys. I like 12 Monkeys. I like 12 Monkeys a lot.
I there's things about it that I like, you know. The Wonderful Madeline Stowe, of course.
Indeed, the Wonderful Madeline Stowe.
But, okay, what else?
12 Years a Slave.
Okay.
127 Hours.
Oh, right, yes, okay.
21 Jump Street.
Sure.
The 25th Hour.
Still never seen it.
28 Days Later / 28 Weeks Later.
I have seen Weeks and not Days.
Days is great, Weeks is fine.
Okay.
Yeah. 310 to Yuma.
Which one?
The 2007 one, which is kind of a kick. It's like fun. I'm kind of into that. 500 Days of Summer. Oh, come on. It's nice.
It's
nice, the 500 Days of Summer.
It's a movie that the more I look back on it, the more I just sort of focus on the irritatingly twee parts. But there's some nice stuff.
You behave yourself. Begin Again. That's your new name. Begin Again.
Whatever, Mr. Good Thighs.
50-50.
Okay, yeah.
Honorable mentions. 2012.
That was fun.
I'm into it, yeah.
That was fun.
30 Days of Night, which didn't I'm also kind of into. 300, which
didn't
is
see
ridiculous. The 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Yes.
9.5 Weeks.
Woo!
Slave to Love. This is from Dale, the guy doing a list for every letter of the alphabet.
Oh, okay.
So what do we give him? What are we, a 95% knife?
Yeah.
Let's say 90, because I don't think I want to give you 28 Weeks Later, and you don't want to give him 12 Monkeys.
Yeah.
So okay. You're still 90% knife. That is your knifed rating.
That's real good.
For this list.
For your numbers.
So that's the top 10 list that we will read to you today. And wait, I'm scrolling up to the rest of the letters, and I will read them to you soon. Hang on.
How many years are we doing this show?
No, it's just my Word document thing that just goes really slowly, and I don't know why sometimes it just moves as slowly.
You shouldn't always pour your letters into Word.
It gets stuck. Well, I can't do it any other way. I've got to.
You could read them out of your actual inbox.
No, they would get lost. They always get lost. All right, I'm almost there. Here it is.
Come on, Ada Lovelace.
I'm fixing to get it here. Hi, Linoleum Knife. You don't necessarily have to read this on the show.
Too late.
But it's kind of trivial. Because it's kind of trivial. But after listening to listener Molly chastise Dave, which it didn't feel so much like a chastisement. It just felt like the beginning of a conversation that needed to be had.
She
so that I could explain more about my ideas about the problematic representation of trans people in sleepaway camp. Which, by the way, we got that sleepaway camp Blu-ray. And I started watching the commentaries and the making of little documentary that they brought.
No interviews with Christopher Collette, by the way, which I was very
I have come to the decision that it's an even more problematic film than I ever even gave it credit for being. I mean, I still read it as a, you know, powerful trans person getting revenge kind of movie. But the people involved in making this film, right down to the actors, they just did not care. They were woohoo and
like, did they know enough to be transphobic? Or were they just completely trans
ignorant? They were just ignorant about everything and just thought, oh, I'm gonna put a strap on, woohoo, you know. And I guess, you know, if you were a teenager in the 80s and you were making that movie, was there any way that you would know to be not a not gross about this? If you were a filmmaker in the 80s and this was the only movie of any substance that you ever actually made.
Right. They couldn't have brought in Kate Bornstein to be like a consultant?
I mean, don't know. I honestly do not know what they were thinking. All I know is how I take it.
The way I take it
ignores all intention.
Even in looking at homophobic stuff from the 60s or 70s, you have to ask yourself, were they actively hostile, or were they just rock stupid?
Yeah,
you know.
I'm going with rock stupid on this one, because I do know that
rock stupid is no excuse.
Yeah, Rose, the star, took great pains in the documentary to talk about, you know, how much she loves the gays. Like, it's kind of a different thing. Gay and trans is not exactly the same. Like I said when we were talking about it, I feel like we're all kind of in the same camp.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, we're all in this together.
In the same sleepaway camp.
But, sort of. but yeah, no one in the making of
had any idea.
They don't even seem to have any idea.
Now.
Yeah. It's kind of a... Y'all, sleepaway camp is not a good movie. That's what I'm trying to say.
Anyway, letter. Yeah. What is the letter?
After listening to Molly chastise Dave, I was reminded of a conversation I had about whether or not the movie Her passes the Bechdel test.
Hmm.
In Her, the only female-to-female conversations that we see or that are implied are between humans and computers, between Samantha and the surrogate girl in the sex scene, and between Amy and her OS in that unforgettable scene where Amy makes a character in her suburban mom roleplay game, Grind the Fridge. Do these conversations count? Or are OSs disqualified because they're virtual?
I would just say, as a general rule of thumb, that Her probably does not pass the Bechdel test because it's so much a movie about Joaquin Phoenix's character.
That's about him.
Yeah, yeah. Basically. And I think that the Bechdel test has sort of been warped out of recognition in a sense lately, but you know, if we're going to go by the strict standards laid down therein, then I would say no. That Her,
I think it's a good test to apply to films,
sure,
that have female characters in them.
Yes,
if the movie is not about women on any level, if it is a movie only about guys and there are only men in the cast,
right?
And then obviously it can't.
And
apply,
I think also there are movies that pass the Bechdel test but are still terrible, and even that are even still sexist.
Right.
Because you could have two women having a conversation about, you know, just something really stupid and in a dumb way, and that in no way makes them more interesting or more human.
Right.
And ostensibly, you know, by the letter of the law, yes, they passed the Bechdel test.
Right. I listen to your show every week and giggle inappropriately every time Dave... He wrote the word chimps something, and I think maybe spell correct or something... Maybe he wanted to say chirps.
I don't know. Act like a chimp.
Or maybe I'm a chump. Could be. Or maybe I am just chimping.
Just big chimping.
I'm big chimping all the time. Also, I have found a way to circumvent that pesky international shipping cost, so I will be... I don't know how you're doing that, but let me know. So I will be ordering a t-shirt, once I iron out all the details. So all the best, Renee.
Woo!
If you, like Renee, would like to order a t-shirt, a linoleum knife t-shirt, they are $20. We are taking pre-orders right now. I think we need about 5 more orders or something like that
before
we are ready to sign them
and
off.
So pre-orders
thank
will
you
get
for
theirs
your patience,
first. Yes.
All you people who have pre-ordered.
PayPal $20 to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Make sure you include... These are Hanes Beefy Tees, 100% cotton, black. So let us know what size you want and to what address we should be mailing them.
Hello. Have you all considered your lack of air conditioning before, and have you ever considered a Vornado brand fan? That's from Dynamoxy.
We have a Vornado.
We have a Vornado. It's fine. It's all right. The thing that works better is the big giant box fan that we have. Because not only can you put your mouth up to it and talk like a robot, but also if you set it in the door and you've got an open window and a ceiling fan on, it just whooshes the cool air of the night in through the bedroom and out through the hot living room and out the sliding glass door and into the night where it belongs. We don't suffer too much, only when it gets brutally hot, mm-hmm. when it's in like the upper 90s.
But then we should maybe implement the Bornado as well.
But I'm kind of, you know, after we talked about the lack of air conditioning and how this might be the summer that we need to get one, I've kind of re-dug my heels in on not getting one. Because I just, like, the future is coming where they're all... Everything is going to break down, and we're all going to be living with no air conditioning again anyway. Because humans are going to be gone in 50 years. Because we've killed Earth. We've already killed it. We're just waiting for ourselves. We're waiting for it to puke on us right now.
It'll be great when the bees restore their population after we're all dead.
So I just don't know that I want to hasten that in any way with an air conditioner. I mean, if I lived in Texas, I'd help tell you another story.
Because that's a must.
You might as well just move to Norway. If you live in Texas, you're going to live with 120-degree temperatures for the rest of your life. Anyway, that's it. That was that letter asking us about our fan. And then what else letters do we have? We don't have time for any more letters because we've got things we've got to get off to go to. So,
but we welcome your letters.
That is the end of letters.
Please keep sending them. As always, we thank you for listening. Check out our friends all over the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Check out the Rotten Tomatoes podcast with Matt and Gray. The B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney. They both came to the drive-in last night.
They both did.
Bibbs
sat in the front seat of our car with me. But he was trying to turn it into a makeout.
What a special drive-in moment.
He really, I don't want to call him out or anything. Mm-hmm. You know,
I'm amazed you guys managed to stay in the front seat.
He was all hands.
What I'm saying. check out Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, The Schmoes Know, Film Spotting, SVU, Podcrash, The Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and The Lunch. You can subscribe to this show for free at iTunes, and please leave us a nice review while you're there. It does help people find the show. You can stream us at Stitcher Radio or TheLounge.com. There's also a streaming app on our Facebook page, which you should go like, Linoleum Knife Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. Check into the show at TVTag.com. And drop us an email at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with your questions, your comments, your top 10 lists, your bottom 10 lists. And that's also where you can PayPal us for t-shirts and for the extra episodes of the show. Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knife. Visit linoleum-knife.com to see all of our stuff that we write there and that we post in other for the sites where we work. And of course, we thank Blue for our wonderful theme music. You can find out more about his great catalog of hits at bluetopia.com, BLEUTOPIA. Next weekend is July 4th, but we're going to be here and we will do an episode and we will talk to you then.
Goodbye.